Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Torgrud.
I'd say glad to be back, but it is 6 o'clock in the morning. You guys think I don't know what I'm talking about most of the time? Well, wait till you hear me say it's sleepy. So but I'm here. I'm back in the old office instead of in the living room. And it should be a quick one. Madison's not here. His son's sick, so that's why he couldn't be here. He is up right now as well. He's not asleep. If anything, this is the sleepiest he's ever been because he's been in the hospital all night with his kid. So, you know, send him your wishes.
Get well and, soon, yeah.
Yeah.
He's babysitting instead of us babysitting him. So there's that. But no, seriously, get well soon to Maddie Jr. That's not what he's actually called, but I'm not going to spout his kid's name on a podcast. But yeah, hopefully he'll be back next week. We've got just a one game to review. But quite a lot happened in said game. 5 goals, obviously a major incident, which I'm sure everyone is aware of. And then we've got a game to preview. And of course, we will go through some listener questions. Before we dive into this week's episode, thank you, as always, to our loyal Substack founding members, Des Windsor McGlynn, Ali Tareen, Tito Mack, Moritz Pullman, Joey Gawler, Kemin, MJ Mats, Luke Villano, and Raul Escobar. Really appreciate the support from you guys. I want you all to go and check out the Substack, and you can try 7 days for free, of course. But it would be good if you can keep your suggestions coming in as well for things that you'd like to see on there. Those of you who are subscribers and those of you who are thinking about subscribing but would like to see something else, let us know. We're all ears. We're always open to feedback. So that would be very much appreciated. And if you do subscribe to the Substack, it really helps what we do. Let's go then. Udinese away on Saturday night at the Stadio Friuli, or the Blue Nergy Stadium now, is it? Something like that?
Yeah.
It was like some
weird...
Blue Nergy
combined into one. It's stupid.
Yeah, very strange. I prefer it as the Dacia Arena. Yeah. Because Dacia is such a niche brand of car as well. I think it's actually made around there or something. That's why they have this sponsorship.
What even is Blue Energy? Is it an energy drink?
I was going to say it's like some renewable energy thing, but normally it'd be like green energy, right?
That's why I was confused. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Anything energy.
Wow, it's Marine Energy Solutions. So
okay. That makes sense.
A renewable energy solution provider in Asia, specifically. So there you go.
Why are they advertising in Italy?
I don't know.
Is
Udine even on the coast? It might be. I'm looking at a map quickly. No, it's landlocked, so that makes even less sense. But here we are. It's like, at least with Napoli, it's MSC Cruises, although so are we, and Milan is in land, so it's what it is. Get those petrodollars in while you can. We didn't have a good recent record against Udinese. Hadn't won there since 2020.
We
made it difficult this time as well. Pioli, as well as a manager, had never beaten Gabriele Cioffi. Of course, it was his first game against him as the Udinese manager, given that he came in earlier in the season to replace Sutil. But there were a couple of negative trends to end in this one. Again, as kind of mentioned in the intro, there is obviously a major talking point from this game that sadly does not really involve the action on the field. But the best justice we can do to it, and I think the logical way to do it is to just kind of go through the game chronologically and talk about it that way rather than veering off too much on a tangent early doors. But of course, we will address what we need to. And we start, I guess, with us playing well, creating chances. Giroud should probably bury that one in the 15th minute. I think it was the 15th minute.
Yeah, it's 50. It was like 15:05, so technically 16th minute, but you know, if you're watching back, it'll take you 15 minutes to get to it. Through ball, fantastic through ball. Weird seeing Giroud making a run and then taking a shot with his foot. And as we know, he still hasn't scored with his foot in a while. So, that really should have been an assist for Liao. I know everyone wants to hate on him because of stats right now. And you and I slightly differ on that narrative, but. Yeah, I think Liao was fantastic, and we'll get into it, but had a great through ball for that Giroud chance. Obviously, he didn't score it. Then the next one came, and it was, again, a Liao through ball, this time to Teo, who then slotted it back and almost found Giroud, almost ruined the chance, but he took a last-second dummy as he saw Ruben Loftus-Cheek running it behind him and, you know, inside his foot, and boom, slotted it home. It was fantastic. That's kind of... I mean, we must work that exact play on the training ground, because we've had that goal quite a few times this season already. And
yeah, RLC scored one just like that before.
Yeah.
I think they pick up that run at the penalty spot.
It's fantastic. I mean, it obviously works all the time, so keep it up. And it's fun to watch. Always a good way to start a match going forward. That was about the 31st minute. And then immediately thereafter, the game stopped.
Yeah, it did. On the goal, as you say, really, really good team play. I always think with Udinese, they're going to be difficult to break down, because even though they line up in a 3-5-2, 3-5-1-1, whatever you want to say, in defence, they're very much a 5-3, and it's hard to break that down. You need runners from midfield, which is what we got. You need smart players from the wide areas, but not too wide, because obviously they've got the wing-backs to cover the crossing areas, and I think that's where Pulisic maybe didn't get into the game as much, whereas Leao playing a bit inside. You know, we will come to the Leao and RLC thing, because it is one of the rare times that we disagreed on performances in a game. But what I will say is Leao absolutely deserved an assist for that through ball to Giroud. I don't understand why he hits it straight at his chest. You know, you think the position that he was in, he should be hitting that low angled across goal to try find the bottom corner. Or if you're determined to elevate the shot, you're going near post top corner, you know, to try and power it past the keeper. Instead, he just hits it straight at the keeper. And I think there we see why Giroud has so many more goals with his head compared to with his boots. But that was a good bit of play. And yeah, it did kind of set the tone for the goal that eventually came. What I love about RLC is that it's Reinders who finds himself in better shooting positions majority of the time. But RLC is showing him how to finish. Yeah. Just a composure to side foot it across goal, because the keeper has... It's almost like if anyone watches ice hockey, like how a goalkeeper hugs the post, you know, so they don't get beaten at their near side because it's an embarrassment. In football, it's the same kind of concept. A goalkeeper will always probably shuffle over to their near post more when attacks are building down a particular side. So when the cutback comes in, the keeper doesn't have much time to respond. And that is why RLC knows side foot, first time, far corner, it's probably going in if it's on target. And he scored a couple of goals like that before. And of course, he scored that goal from distance as well in the Cagliari game, I believe. So good to see him contributing on the score sheet, because I think we've kind of lacked those goals from midfield since Tonali left. You know, he developed that knack in his final season and the Scudetto season of being in the right place at the right time. And RLC, when he plays that bit further forward, I think opponents struggle to track him. And then, yeah, the very unfortunate, the disgusting, the embarrassing... I run out of negative superlatives to use for what happened. However, just to kind of factually recap what did occur, Maignan had reported to the match officials that he was, when he took a goal kick, he was receiving monkey chants from a section of Udinese supporters behind the goal, which
he
is where
he heard it before the game started as well.
Yeah, during warm-ups. And that's where the ultras congregate. Now, I'll get it out of the way. I'm not going to tar everybody with the same brush and say that it was 100 people that were doing it. Udinese have said that it was 3 or 4. They will hopefully look at the footage, ban for life those who were responsible. But yeah, he reported it. A message came over the PA system to tell the supporters to stop. That's the first step of the protocol that that Liga Serie A officially put in place. Then Maignan said again to the match officials, this is still happening. And then the second point of the protocol is to take the players off the field for however long it takes to restore order, basically. Maignan was visibly angry and very understandably angry and upset with what had gone on. So he went over to the referee. He even seemed to have a quite heated discussion with the Udinese manager about it, almost as if he was sort of, you know, I don't know what was said, so I'm not going to put words in anyone's mouth, but it did seem like everyone was, did seem like there was an element of, are you sure you want to go off the pitch? Mm-hmm. And he went off down the tunnel, rightly so.
And Yassine Adli was the first one to follow him off the pitch. You see Teo Hernandez, there's actually a video with audio where you could hear Teo is the one saying, come on, everyone, let's go. We're walking off the pitch. We're going with Mike. He's our boy.
Captain
and,
stuff.
You know, that's, yeah, incredible. You know, this solidarity of our team to walk off the pitch when they're winning. They just scored a goal. Momentum is in your side. You could push for a second really fast. That team is mentally, they're not there. You know, they just got scored. They're shell shocked. And we say, you know what? We're done. We're not doing this shit. Doesn't matter about the game. Doesn't matter if we're winning. We're walking off. And that's obviously going to kill your momentum. It's going to give them time to regroup. And that's just the side effect of taking a break in the game. And the team and Mike, and I think everyone, Milan fans, agree that it was still the right thing to do.
Yes.
And so they all walked off. It took them, what, 8-9 minutes, something like that? I don't know
around
exactly
about
what time it was.
Around about that,
About there. And you know, props to Maresca, not my favorite referee, but he handled it expertly. You know, he agreed, said, okay, we're walking off, and they all walked off. And once they got the situation under control, which I don't think they ever did, but Mike didn't complain again. Granted, he also was then on the other side of the pitch 10 minutes later. So,
yeah, the Milan ends. Yeah.
So, it's just, it's hard to go into detail on this because I wasn't there. I don't know how it made him feel, you know, things like that. But obviously we all recognize that it's the wrong thing and it's shitty and it should never happen. You know, I think Mike did exactly what he should have done. You know, he could have reacted towards the fan and got himself in trouble, because you've seen that as well. The objective of them doing it is to get in your head. And, you know, I think they succeeded to an extent, especially after the reset. It didn't look like Mike was all there. And, you know, we'll talk
the
about
team,
the goals he let in earlier.
The whole team too. It throws the team off their rhythm because we played well to that point.
So, I mean, it's one of those things that, you got to start doing something to the teams, you know, force them to forfeit the game. Now no fan's ever going to do it, you know, it'll never happen. And Devil's Advocate says, oh, well, then someone will dress up as the other team fan, and if they're losing, they'll do it. And like, maybe, but you know the tickets, you see where they came from. Like, there might be a few situations where I guess that could happen, but it's just not realistic. You know, more often than not, you're there in your own jersey. You're not going to bring the opposition team jersey. You're not going to buy one of those just in case you need to be racist to you know, forfeit a match. That's not how it works. So you need to start punishing the team. It's not just make them play behind closed doors, because that does nothing. Those fans are just, they save 50 euros and then come back the following week. Like, okay. You know, there's a lot of things in that topic of what can be done, what needs to be done.
Could do a whole other podcast on it, to be honest.
Yeah.
And also need to acknowledge at this point that we are two white guys speaking about this, and we therefore do not have the experience nor the expertise to necessarily say this is what needs to be done. But, you know, I think with Maignan in particular, you've got to remember that he's already experienced two incidents of this season. It happened against Juventus and it happened against Cagliari, where he was targeted. Sorry, the Juventus game might have been last season, but it's already happened twice as sort of high profile incidents. We remember the ugly scenes in Cagliari where Tomori and another player had to go over and sort of say, what the hell are you doing? There seems to be something consistent in this, in that it's the group of fans behind the goal with the balaclavas on or whatever, you know, scarves around the face, and they probably think that they can get away with this kind of thing. One solution. One solution for me would be, in this case, you know, it was that group behind the goal, and they congregate there every game, and it was the same with Cagliari, and it was the same with the Juventus ultras. You know, I don't want to call them supporters because it feels like giving them too much credit, really. But you send the police in and say, either you volunteer who did it, or you're all going, you're all leaving the stadium. That's perhaps too simplistic a solution in every case, because you can get it from various areas of the ground and that's a lot harder to police. But we just know in Italy in particular, and this is a societal problem above all else, but we know in Italy there are problems with right-wing ultras groups, you know, and they are ultimately the biggest stain when it comes to this kind of problem. It's so sad to see. Look, I know before people come in and sort of say, oh, it's not just Italy, that is correct. You know, there are incidents that are happening all around Europe, and what about it doesn't help in this situation. It all needs to be stamped out, full stop. But just as a point of comparison, I have been to probably 500 plus games over here in England, and I swear on my life, I have never seen a single incident of racial abuse.
Continue, sir.
No problem. Whereas in Italy, in my second Milan derby, I witnessed racial abuse. That's just a personal experience of mine. And you know, it's sad above all else. It's sad that we're in 2024 and people still believe they have the license to behave this way. People still discriminate based on skin color and stuff like that. But look, the way it's all been handled as well, in my opinion, has been mixed. You know, the Syria highlights made absolutely... And people say, of course, they're not going to they want to promote their product, blah, blah, blah. But the Syria highlights made absolutely no allusion to the stoppage. The highlight was Milan's goal and then Udinese's equaliser. Udinese tweeted out saying there's been a stoppage, but now we're back after a few minutes. Absolutely zero reference to... And again, yes, clubs are going to protect themselves and their image, but it's irresponsible and it's just going to draw even more heat and even more toxicity to the debate when you're completely ignoring what's happened and it's your fans who are responsible. And Maignan made a fantastic post on Instagram after the game. I would urge everybody to go and read it. He talks about a call to action. He talks about various things that I also believe to be very true. Again, speaking from a position of somebody who's not experienced it, but... if you're around and you hear it and you do nothing, you're complicit. I do believe that genuinely. And yeah, go read it if you haven't already. We translated it on our website. You can find it. But then there was the mayor of Udine came out after the game and invited Maignan back to the city and offered him an honorary citizenship of the city. Read the room.
Yeah.
You know,
he doesn't want to be there. He doesn't want to be there.
Yeah, I don't think he wants to go back after what's happened. You know, that's not the way to do it. You go to Milan and you say, I apologize on behalf of the people who claim to support the team from our city, you know, and I know it's difficult, isn't it? But I'm not really that happy with what's happened afterwards. No. I have to be honest.
You know what? I just want to give big props to Milan, right? Obviously, we were... Not we. Mike was the victim in this, but a Milan player. So, you know, our club is the one that, you know what I'm trying to say.
We were implicated. Yeah.
So, in all these incidents, it's never Milan doing it. And a lot of that comes down to club culture. You know, you see it happen to other teams. You see when Udinese did the exact same thing to Lukaku and Inter Ultras said, take it as a badge of honor, you know, that they think they need to get in your head. It's a compliment, like that ridiculous roundabout way of thinking, you know, and you see it from all these other teams. And look, it never happens in Milan. And it's not because there aren't shitty people in the Milan stadium. There's shitty people in every city of the world. Half of them are on the other team in our city, you know? So there's obviously shitty people in the Milan stadiums. We know that. But the fact of the matter is it never happens. And that's because our club is one of the few in Italy that takes a clear-cut stance every single time. We're the first to post the hashtag we respect.
Respect, with, know,
with the, yeah. With the A act. It just shows like what Milan cares about is we don't support this shit and you're not going to either, not in our stadium. Mm-hmm. And I think the ultras know that if we were to do it in San Siro, they'd be banned for life. Full stop.
Yeah.
I truly believe that's how Milan would react. Not saying sorry, not saying pretending it didn't happen, not honorary citizenship to the guy that they abused. Like, you know, Milan would act, and that's the difference. The club culture. If the other clubs start showing that it's unacceptable, maybe the fans will too.
Yeah, absolutely. Fully agree. And again, I don't want to tar everybody with the same brush because 99.whatever% of Udinese fans behave normally on the night. However, in Italy, I think it's well established that there are certain clubs with certain ultra groups that lean towards the left and right. And a lot of time, your fans of those clubs will go out of the way to say those are outdated stereotypes. However, what continues to happen on a year-to-year basis only strengthens them. Mm. As you mentioned with Inter and what they said about Lukaku when he was their own player and then when he came back, you know... Lazio are another group that have been known to do it. Roma, everyone thinks, well, Lazio are very right wing, so Roma must be the other way. Nope, they're very bad for it as well. A lot of provincial clubs, as mentioned with Cagliari in the incident before, Juventus have right wing leaning groups. Now, I am never going to say that those groups represent supporters in any way, and I wouldn't even call them fans. You know, I'd call them criminals if they're going to behave in such a way. However, does seem to be the same clubs that crop up, and maybe that's where you can focus your You know, Juventus, for example, in their stadium, put in the away pen, because it literally is a pen, you're fenced in, they put CCTV cameras on poles in the corners of where the fans are, pointed at the away fans. You think you want to be pointing them the other way, you know, with some of the stuff that goes on behind the goal there. But there you go. It proves that it can be CCTV'd or whatever.
Well, and it shows that they're aware it happens, right? That they know that it's an issue and that they want to catch people, except for when it's them.
Yes, absolutely. If you don't do anything like that, you've got nothing to hide, have you? I think that's it. I think we'll move on, because what we can now focus on, well, after the two goals that we'll talk about, is how we had the last laugh. And I don't mean last laugh in a trivial sense. I just mean, you know, we were able to celebrate the victory. And I think that meant a lot to the team. You could see it at the end of the game with everybody getting around Mike and stuff. Firstly, Lazar Samardzic put Simon Kjær on his ass.
Yeah, he set him down.
Terrible.
It looked bad. It looked really bad from Kjær. It was shortly after the resumption, and you could see, like, Mike was, well, maybe he wasn't even mentally, he was still not in it. So I give him a pass. It just, you know, when you take a break, like I said, it kills your momentum, especially when it's a break for this. You're now on the downturn of the energy, and you know, they took advantage of that. And then to go celebrate in front of their ultras, really, it showed some interesting character, in my opinion. But
what was the comment on the there was a comment on the Serie A feed that was broadcasted globally, and it was something like, what a response to Cam and those supporters, or something.
I wish I knew the guy's name, the commentator. He was the World Feed commentator, not Patrick Kendrick. No. And it wasn't the old man who barely speaks English. Everyone knows who I'm talking about. It was the other guy that, I think he's English based on his accent. He said something like, what a response from the players to calm down their fans, or something ridiculous like that.
So bad.
Yeah. Anyways, moving on from that, but they scored.
It was a tidy goal. Like, I'm not, it feels hard to like give away too much credit given what happened and what we've just talked about. But Samardzic, you can kind of see, and I did think this after the game as well, you can see why some of the top clubs in Italy are linked with him. He looked their main creative threat by a mile. It was a nice move to sit Kjær down, and he showed all his immobility with that particular play. And it was a nice finish. I mean, people say Maignan didn't move. That's what I thought at first. I'm like, whoa, he hadn't dived for that. However, he bent it really nicely inside the post, and he wouldn't have had a chance anyway. It was a nice goal, and it was a nice equaliser. That's about as much credit as I can give them, to be honest.
Yeah, and that's really it. And then moving forward, you know, is kind of a scrappy, cagey game from that point on. Personally, I thought our midfield looked really bad. It felt like there was a lot of dispossession, a lot of things that just weren't working out. A lot of chances created that just were finding nobody on the end, you know, be it Loftus-Cheek moving the ball upfield, be it Liao beating his man, creating a chance, and there was no one in the box to receive that cross. Same with Teo. Even same with Pulisic. I think he had quite a few opportunities to create a chance, and there just was no one on the receiving end.
Yeah.
We really looked discombobulated after the equalizer for a good 20-30 minutes, in my opinion. And then, obviously, it was Florian Thauvin had the ball, corner of the box, the right side for them. And he's 2v1, Reinders and Teo. He goes to dribble, loses possession of his own ball, very rookie move, and Reinders has it at his foot. Cool, you clear the ball out. That's what you anticipate. No, he's going to make a, you know, 6-inch to 1-foot distance pass at full power to Teo. And it goes right between Teo's legs, who doesn't recognize it went between his legs. And now Thauvin gets around Teo, gets the ball wide open, shoots it straight at Maignan, inches from his face, meters. And right in between his hands, right above his head. There's not a whole lot he could do there. People could say, you know, you close your hands. But the whole idea of being a goalkeeper is making yourself big.
Yeah.
And you don't know where he's going to shoot it, especially at that close of a range. And that ball's coming at you so fast. You just get big and hope for the best. And obviously, the worst. So
Yeah.
It's about down 2-1, you know?
Yeah. I can't remember. I think I said it in the chat with you and Martino, but like, first rule of defending as a defender, if you're in trouble, get fucking rid of the ball, you know? And I'm just watching these two like, oh, who's got it? Oh, like the ball's just bobbling about between their feet. And then Teo gets a couple of touches on it and can't do anything. Like we saw earlier in the game, Gabia make a fantastic intervention. We'll come on to his performance, no doubt. Well, that was a fantastic intervention. But just prior to that, there was a ball that was knocked into the channel. And he's in a 1v1 battle with Luca, I believe. And if he comes out the wrong side of that, they're through on goal and it's a goal. So what does he do? He comes across and he nuts it into the stand. Get rid of it. Danger done. We can reorganize. But I don't know what the hell was going on there. Like, just get it away, man. What are you trying to do? Dribbling your way out the box? Like, you know, that was the only way that you could give such a big chance to them, and you did it. And Teo has been really good, much improved in recent weeks. And I think Reinders has had some positive performances as well. However, that was an error that led to a goal. You know, that stat that you see on FotMob and things like that, errors leading to goal. That, mm-hmm. And you wonder, what can you clear-cut categorize as an error leading to goal? That is it. That is it. That's the one. By the absolute letter. And yeah, I mean, when it first went in, I went, oh, Mike, like that's gone straight through him. You know, he should be saving that. It's in his window, if you know what I mean. It wasn't near post top corner. It wasn't, you know. However, you're right. He hit it in the one area where when you're a goalie making yourself big, you've probably not got covered. It's kind of like the five hole, again, to use an ice hockey reference, straight up.
I do want to point out, and this is going back to right after their first goal. It might have actually been before their first goal. I can't remember when. It was definitely before we were down 2-1. Mm-hmm. Mike made a great low save with his foot. He just stuck it out and got a touch to it. I want to throw that out there because about Mike today, obviously. And I just want to make sure we also highlighted the good things about his performance because he did have a lot of great moments. And that was certainly one of them. Did you have more on the 2-1 or no?
For those who are watching on video, that was the save because I sent it to Isaac and said, Jesus, we need to highlight that because that was an incredible save. That would have made it 2-1 to them. That was in the second half.
Okay.
No, I don't have anything to add to that. It was another defensive lapse. And I must admit, my mind then slipped into, this is going to be another one of them nights in Udine where we come away and it's like a demoralizing defeat for so many reasons. Mm-hmm. But again, the second half drop off because we hadn't really created an awful lot to that point. You know, if anything, they were kind of pushing to go ahead and they did get ahead. And I'm thinking, I don't know if we have the minerals to come back in this game. And again, it'll look like we've surrendered a lead again, getting outplayed in the second half, as has been a theme so far this season. Then a couple of super subs came up with the goods.
Yeah, I mean, it's been them boys, you know. Luka Jovic again, and look. You know, I don't want to take anything away from him because the striker IQ, the instinct to be there, to go for that diving header, regardless if the ball is 95% past the line already or not, at the end of the day, we saw the replay. Giroud's shot did not go in. I thought it did. I said, that's Giroud's goal. And Jovic got there because no one else was getting there. But to go back to the creation of that goal, Liao had the hockey assist on it, as you will, the pre-assist, you know, slotted it into Giroud, who, you know what, I don't know if it even counts as an assist for Giroud, does it? Because it hit the post?
The keeper tipped it onto the crossbar as well. So
it doesn't.
Opposition touch.
We can beat this guy.
You still had a hand, man.
So Liao makes the pass into Giroud, who, again, shoots it and... it actually is a fantastic shot. Keeper, like you say, gets a touch, pushes it to the top bar, bounces down inside of the line, not entirely over, again, like 95%, 98% over the line. But he doesn't react after that. He just watches it, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. As was the goalkeeper, as was everyone around him. No one was going for this ball. Who does? Luka Jovic, the guy no one wanted, myself included, the guy who's been on fire since December. And dove in, and he just knew where to be. And so he got it. That's a goal. That's an equalizer. And then because he's got that winner's mentality, he doesn't just celebrate an equalizer. He grabs that ball and runs it to the middle. Let's go again. You know, let's do this shit. We got 10 minutes.
Love that.
Yeah, it's exactly what you need from a team that wants to fight for the Scudetto, top four, what have you. You know, most small teams, if they equalize in that moment, they're celebrating. They're going to celebrate for 5 minutes, waste the rest of the time. Not us. We want to get that third. We want to win. Restart the play again. And keep going. I don't remember what minute. Was it 90 plus two for the third?
90 plus three.
90 plus three. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you could talk about this one because I don't remember who had the assist.
This one was a Giroud assist.
Ah, okay.
So I'm going to give credit to Alessandro Florenzi for the corner delivery. Mm-hmm. It took me a while to realize that it was Florenzi who took the corner, because if you've seen the video, and we did tweet it out, there is sort of, it was taken from behind Milan's goal. So obviously Maignan looking out at what's happened, and the corner goes in, Okafor scores. Adli is on the halfway line as like the last man. And his first thought is to go running back to Mike to give him a hug. And as the camera pans across to him jumping on Mike, Florenzi is also there jumping on Mike. Mm-hmm. So he took the corner and ran 100 yards after we scored to go and hug him, which I thought was a really, really incredible moment, to be honest. And
yeah, goalkeepers celebrate alone. That's something people don't really think about. They're very
surprised he didn't go running up to that end, you know. I would have done. I'm that person.
I would have got the card.
Yeah. And also, yeah, I mean, look, it's a game full of emotion. And just on the goal, great delivery, yeah. Flick on from Giroud. Okafor, nice touch. You know, we've seen chances spurned where that first touch from our player has let us down, and the chance goes begging. But he took it well, and he hammered it in at the near post. And obviously it sparked rapturous scenes. But look, it isn't a victory that might necessarily all of a sudden make us Scudetto challengers. It doesn't move the needle in a huge way, at least until another team above us were to drop points. But like, sometimes you can just enjoy the emotion of a win and be like, I've just watched a game of football that was a good game of football, 5 goals, but with everything that happened, you just feel so fired up afterwards. And that, like somebody, Kostas, who's done some articles for us before, said, you know, you can forget who are the scorers in some big Champions League wins. You can forget the aggregate score lines of games and stuff like that. But then like that, just kind of what will look like in years to come, a regulation win, everyone will look at that scoreline and be like, I remember exactly what happened in that game.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just one of them. It is just one of them. Like, what is football without these emotional narratives? If we can't get fired up for something like that, when can we?
No, I mean, that's, I don't want to say a great advert for the game, because ultimately the main talking point is, you know, the break and play, but as far as actual game goes, I mean, how can you not love this sport? You know, you watch that and you're just like, that was retribution on the field. But there's more narratives than just that break in the game as well. You know, this was a team who's won 7 games in their last 50, minutes away from beating us for the third consecutive time. A team who's in the last 3 years, won a Scudetto, been in top four, looking to do it again. You know, it's like there's a huge narrative there. This was the game that got Pioli his 100th win with Milan. Did it in 166 games. Only Carlo Ancelotti's done it faster. He did 165. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there was a ton of storylines in this game. And
yeah,
it almost, and I don't want to, you know, knock on wood here, but it felt like we put the demons to bed. You know, like, there's no more. Will this be our bogey team going forward? I don't know. You know, there was a turning point. It used to be Sassuolo every season. And then we were down 3-1, and all of a sudden we won 4-3 in like 15 minutes. I think that was in 2015. Maybe it was 2016.
Yeah.
We haven't struggled against them, asterisks, because, you know, last season we did lose a big margin, but we really haven't. They haven't been that team where you go to and you think, ah, this is it. We're losing. We're dropping points here since that moment. And this might have been that same moment for the Udinese game. Because every season, this is a game where we go,
yeah,
we're going to drop some points. But we didn't. So
we predicted it, like, in last week's episode. Yeah. Yeah, it was a massive mental hurdle to overcome. Dare I say, it feels like, and we will see what will happen in the weeks to come, we'll probably drop points in the next game now, but it feels like it could be a launching point. You know, we've gone from such uncertainty at the start of the year. Will Pioli even keep his job? The players look shot. And then to have a win like that, you hope it's something that we can really build off and keep this momentum going, because we have won four in a row in the league. You know, unfortunately, the two teams above us are not slipping up, but they play each other at the end of the month. Inter have got a couple of tougher fixtures. Yeah, they've been rolling this season, so you kind of expect them to win. And Juve just haven't been letting up, and Vlahovic looks back to his best. But all we can do is keep putting pressure on them and be ready if there's a slip-up. We've got Bologna and Frosinone after this. Could it become six wins in a row? And then you just have to hope for some favours from elsewhere. But it felt like a victory from the Scudetto season to me. Like, we never know when we're beaten.
Yeah.
Those comebacks, like the Lazio game, Tonali last minute, those emotional moments, that felt like something from then. And we haven't had enough of it this season. I feel like we've sort of laid down and accepted our fate a bit too much. But it was fantastic character. And I guess we'll do tops and flops now and put this one to bed. Top for me, Gabbia.
Oh, we should have mentioned he had a couple of fantastic fucking saves.
Yeah,
and Gier did have a great save in the beginning as well. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll say it. Baresi made two fantastic last-ditch interventions, and as Dada replied to me on Twitter, it's only Udinese. That doesn't matter, man. Like, they're goals, you know? They're goals if he doesn't get those right, or red cards, whatever. But he got them absolutely spot on. It was the kind of timing that Baresi would genuinely be thrilled with. You know, fantastically executed sliding challenges, which, as a centre-back, love to see. And also, again, it was another one of those games where he just looks so much more mobile and more sharp than Kier. Kier didn't have a 1 out of 10 or anything. He totally messed up on that second goal, without a doubt. I'm not going to drag him through the mud or anything, because I think he's had some big performances for us, really, when we weren't expecting them. However, Gabbia just looks like borderline undroppable at this point. He's been really, really good. My MOTM.
Very glad we brought him back from loan, because we need center backs. MB, he's actually lived up to it. It's almost like if a player gets play time, they'll look a bit better, and that's all he needed. So, yeah. Really happy for him. Fantastic. All right, here's some controversy for you, because I know how people are going to react, but I'm saying it anyways because I feel it in my bones. I'm going Leao, and people are going to say, "What, he hasn't scored a league goal since September?" And you're correct. That is a true stat. But in this day and age, we seem to only care about stats. So one that doesn't ever get mentioned, I'm going to expose here. There is a stat for not just creation, but the threat level of that creation and how often he does it. And it really shows how much better you are than your teammates, because a lot of creation depends on that final play, which is someone else. So, for instance, that first through ball that Leao created in the 15th minute to Giroud, who should have went in, right? There's no reason that shouldn't have gone in.
Yeah.
Things like that happen all the time. Getting the pre-assist on a goal, like the second one, kind of, you know, creating the third one as well, by the way. Or, no, I'm sorry. He created the chance that led to the corner kick that Florenzi took.
That's correct, yeah.
Leao actually had a brilliant game, and there is a stat for that. It's called expected threat. And the way that works is they divide the entire pitch up into a grid based on how difficult it is to create something from there, how tight the defense opposition will be against you. Keep in mind, Leao is always triple to quadruple covered in every situation of the game. That's why we brought in strong right wings, because they're not covered. There's always an opening. Yeah. Now, there's a lot more intricacies to it, and there's a great article on some website. I don't know, Google it. And you can find out specifically how it works. But the fact of the matter is, Leao leads it in the league by a huge margin. This game was no different. And, you know, if we want to look at the game objectively with our eyes and not just look at numbers on the score sheet, Leao is still our top player. He's still doing fantastic things left and right. His defensive work rate has increased so much as well recently, specifically this game and the last.
He tracked back and basically played right back at one point in this game late on. Yeah.
And I made a joke while we were there, and I said, Leao's been more effective defensively than offensively lately. And that's partially true, but also he's still creating a lot that ultimately we're just not getting on the end of. And I don't know if that's a Giroud's fault or whomever gets the ball. Reinders missing all those shots from the top of the box. I don't know, but look, Leao's been fantastic. So he's my man of the match. I know he didn't get a goal, but he was intricate to every passage of play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair. So I think I know who you're going to pick for flop, but I'll address that momentarily and just give my flop. My flop was Reinders. It was not a good game from him. I'm torn between him and Kier, to be honest, because Kier got sat down for that second goal. It was a bad bit of defensive play, without a doubt. But I just think Reinders was not at the races at all. And he has a bit of credit in the bank, because I think he's been better recently. I think he's had good games where he's sort of been our metronome creatively. Mm-hmm. This one, not good. Obviously had a hand in that goal that put them 2-1 up. Yeah, just found him really, really frustrating. But really, yeah, it was between him and Kier.
Yeah, actually, I think Reinders is a fantastic pick. It certainly was the midfield that was bothering me this game. And I'm actually a little nervous to say this, but look, again, if you go on FotMob, this is a man who was given man of the match because trackable stats were decent, goals, plus a goal. But the things that you can't track are the things that drive me fucking crazy, especially for a midfielder, because I believe a midfielder's strongest traits should be their off the ball movement, control, how they dictate the pace in the field. And for that reason, I'm going Ruben Loftus-Cheek. And I know I'm a lot of eyebrows, a lot of people in their cars are going to say, what the fuck, Torgrud again? And look, this is the reality of it, is you can't track stats for bad football IQ. You can't track stats for how many times you get in the way of your teammate. You can't track stats for how many times you don't receive the good pass from your teammate and it just goes through you. That's not a dispossess. It's an incomplete pass for the other player. You know, the reason those stats look so good for him is because what he's not doing is preventing him from recording those bad stats, and it's hurting his teammates. It's making his teammates look worse. And if you go back and watch the game at length, not just the highlights, because highlights only show good things, if you go back and watch, you'll see so many times he made the wrong choice, like passing to Giroud, who was out on the wing for some reason, except instead of Liao, who was wide open in the middle of the pitch. Obviously, that led to nothing, so people forget about it because a lot happened after that. But
complete pass just tick.
Fair enough, but it was behind Giroud, which is it was incredible because he's so slow. But there's so many moments where he just got in the way of his own teammate who was running on the ball, or just didn't get to where the pass was going that he should have been, like wide open, things like that. It's just frustrating. And I've seen it the last few weeks since he's returned from injury. It's been a steady decline. Yes, he got the goal, taken fantastically. Love him as a player. I have his jersey on the wall right now. Big fan of Loftus-Cheek, but look, I think he had a really bad game, and I'm picking him because you picked Reinders.
I'll give you a trackable stat for Ruben Loftus-Cheek. He lost possession 10 times.
So that's good, because FotMob only said once. And that's wrong. Like, they're not counting that shit at all.
Which, you know, fair dues. I'll give you more trackable stats, though. He won 11 of his 14 ground duels. He completed 100% of his dribbles. He drew five fouls. I don't know. Can only see the percentage. You might be able to find that, though. I'm just reading from an account. He drew five fouls. He completed five tackles. He had an interception. I am not going to sit here and argue that he was man of the match. That would be disingenuous. But where we disagreed after the game was that you thought Liao was man of the match and RLC was the worst player. I just thought they were probably both more near the middle of the pack. I agree, RLC's performance, especially after the opening 20, like after he scored the goal, basically, was very frustrating. He made some bad decisions. But in that first half of the first half, I thought he was pretty damn good and he looked our main threat. He carried the ball. I'd love to see how many meters he carried the ball for, actually, because it felt like he was well up for it, and he was using his physicality well. I think he did chip in on the defensive end, but a player of him when he's playing a player like him when he's playing further forward is going to be judged for the decisions that he makes in possession and stuff. And I agree that was frustrating, especially in the second half, and he did seem to drift out the game. So that probably bumps him down to being middle of the pack. And Liao, yeah, he created plenty. And I know what you're saying there about stats and expected threat, and I agree that he still creates a high percentage of our danger. But our big star makes star money and must be the star. Like, unfortunately, that's that. And goals and assists aren't everything, as you rightly point out. However, for a player who is our highest earner on the team, he needs to score more often than once every 5 months in the league. That's just where we're at. He needs to find a way if he's double and triple teamed. But yeah, I'm not going to say he had an awful game. I don't think he was anywhere near flop of the match. I just thought that they were both somewhere near the middle. And I also have this feeling that when Liao does get that goal and he breaks that league drought, that he's going to go on a run. So it's almost a case of when, like, not if. So
yeah, yeah. And I agree with all that, by the way. And one thing Loftus-Cheek does better than most is, you know, drive the ball forward when he's actually on it. The frustrating part about it is the then final decision, that last pass that he makes, if he makes it. And that's what let him down, in my opinion. There was another thing you pointed out. Oh, about Liao. Yeah, he should be scoring more, especially for his price and being the star boy and all that stuff. I agree. He should be scoring more. He has scored twice in the last 2 months, though. You know, they just both run the cup.
Yeah.
But yeah, the league, he needs to score more. However, you can't base whole league performance for who is the best in one individual game. So
no, that's right. Yeah.
I still stand by my picks. I understand this is subjective, opinion based, and people will disagree, and that's okay too. I'm not mad at anyone in the comments who disagrees with me. Hopefully you could stay not mad at me.
I think they're all going to agree, mate. I wouldn't worry. let's move on then, shall we, and do the Bologna preview. So Bologna were in the top four for a little bit there. When were they in the top four? Round 16 and 17, yeah. They broke into the top four. They had a good little run where they won 4 out of 5. And that sent them into the new year looking good since then. However, they have lost 3-0 away at Udinese, drawn 1-1 at home against Genoa, and lost away against Cagliari. They have also been knocked out of the cup since then too, since that run of games against Fiorentina. They lost on penalties. They're now in 7th place in the table, which is still pretty good for them. They're still in reach of those top four positions because it's so congested around there. They're still above Napoli, for example, as well. So I would say that they're having a positive campaign. They only lost 1 in their first 11 games. They've still only lost 4 games all season because technically the Fiorentina game was a draw. So they're doing good. And Motta is obviously one of the names that's been linked as our potential head coach. So dare I say this might be an audition of sorts, but while Pioli keeps winning in the league, that's going to be pushed further and further back. Then there's other players that we've been linked with, like Xerxes, Ferguson, Calafiore, who there just feels like a bit more to this than just two teams going at it. Like, we might be taking a little peek into how our future looks.
Yeah, like you said, they're only 2 points outside of top four, right? A win against us could potentially have them in fourth place at the end of the week, or, you know, depending on how the other results go. So they're right there in it. They are a threat. I do think it'll be really interesting to see how Calafiore plays, how Xerxes plays. Xerxes has been on a bit of a drought lately as well. But he's still one of the best strikers in the league right now, especially young strikers. Obviously, we're heavily linked to him and Jonathan David. Be curious to see how that pans out over the summer. But you're right. I do think this is a bit of an audition for players, managers, you know, to see how it goes. Now, Bologna is not a team that has an entire cast of stars, a cast of protagonists. You know, this is not the Leicester miracle story. They're not going to win anything. You know, they're going to be upper mid table, lower top table, if that makes sense. They're going to be probably around that 4th through 7th area, right where they're at. And that's a fair assessment of who they are. That's okay. They are a young team with a new manager, new in the sense that he's new to managing. And look, it could go either way. You know, my concern is, will Thiago Motta crash and burn at a new club? Is it just this one and these specific players are putting in a good work rate with his system? I don't know. Will the players, if we don't get Thiago Motta and we go for the players, will they work under Pioli's system or another manager? We don't know. We haven't seen that yet because they're also young, also green, also fresh. And now getting it into the game preview, that creates a lot of uncertainty, a lot of question marks, and it makes it hard to build a game plan around because we see how they've played this season. But what we haven't seen is long-term habits from these guys. A lot of these guys are young, new, they're in good form. And when you're in good form like that, you're going to try new things that you haven't done. And that might throw us off. You know, it's going to throw off some players. And it'll be a really interesting game. I don't think it'll be a walk in the park. I know they haven't won in their last four. And we have won our last four. But still, you know, anything could happen. That's why we play the game. It'll be an exciting one.
Yeah. 100%. Like, this sounds mega nerdy, but I'm genuinely really excited for this game. You know, it looks Milan-Bologna. It's not a big game. There's no rivalry or anything like that. We're comfortably above them in the table. We're just looking to consolidate third. But for all the things you mentioned, their bad run and some of the players we're linked with being in bad form, you know, all the rumours around the head coach, our good run, and can we trim the gap further to the teams above us? It's great. There's no shortage of narratives and storylines to this game. And you know, I just think it's a great Serie A clash. And I hope that it lives up to that spectacle as well. Because I also don't think that Motta really has it in him to go out for draws. So I think we are going to see an entertaining game where both teams kind of go at each other. And it will be interesting to see if some of those big players for them step up a little bit and treat it as an audition. But I am excited for this one. And also, I think only having one game a week, dare I say it, is nice because you can focus on that. It's not like you finish a game on the Wednesday and then there's another one on the Saturday and you don't have really time to think about it. It is a nice little breather that we're having at the moment. Lineup, would you make any changes from the team that has won the last two games?
I'd start Okafor over Giroud. You look at his goals per minute or goals per 90. I mean, he hasn't had that many minutes, like 130 or something like that this season. He's got four goals. He's always in the right spot at the right time. Like, he always finds a way every single time he's played. They've all been fantastic poacher, striker-esque goals. I think one of them was more of a winger-style goal. I can't remember. But, yeah, I would start Okafor. I think if he's fit, he's healthy, do it. You know, give Giroud a rest. He shouldn't have to play this many consecutive games at his age. And you see when he gets a break from playing, when he comes back, how much sharper and better he looks. We know he can't do this. Like, he's old. It's okay. It's okay to accept that and give the guy a rest a little bit. So I would do that. I would start Okafor or Jovic, whichever, but I would prefer Okafor. I think Okafor might actually be our main striker next season, you know, depending on how things pan out. I think he's a fantastic player. I was a big fan of him last season when they scored against us with Salzburg. But yeah, that's the only change I would make. The rest can absolutely stay the same.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get anyone back really for the defensive department to sort of make any changes at centre back or anything. So I imagine that will remain the same. I'd be tempted to make a change in midfield, depending on who might seem like they could do with a rest. And I'm thinking more towards RLC here, which might seem controversial after I just defended him, but I just think we really need to manage his workload. And what comes up after these Bologna and Frosinone games is Napoli, then midweek in the Europa League, and then we have Monza, and then the return leg so it goes back to being quite a short space, five games, condensed schedule. So I think we need to manage these players in the build up to that. So I'd be tempted to bring Musa in maybe and play him deeper and then push Reinders up or even push Adli up depending what he thinks, or play a three. Either works. Can't really make any changes on the right wing. It looks like Luca Romero's going on loan to Spain. Chukwueze's at AFCON. We might get Benacer back sooner because Algeria are flopping hard. And he's back in training, so he's recovered from his adductor injury. Okay. Yeah, which is very good news. I think you've got to start Liao. You know, he needs as much time as possible to end that drought. And then up front, I'd be tempted to play Jovic. Only thing about Okafor, obviously, he's come back from a 5-week absence. I just wonder if he's got 70-80 minutes in the tank just yet. So depending who's fitter out of them two, I suspect Jovic, I would do that, but I'd be looking to bring Okafor on at some point in the second half to ramp up his minutes, definitely. Prediction? I think we get the job done. Both teams to score 2-1.
Well, okay. He took the words out of my mouth. Yeah, it's 2-1. I'm sure they get a goal. It's hard to not expect a goal against us at this point right now, just with our defensive woes. Obviously, Gabia's looked great. Calabria looked a little shaky yesterday or the day prior. But overall, he's been in better form. Teo's really, he did a great job at center back, but it's so night and day incredible how good he is at left back. So keep him there. And you know, that said, they have a good team as well. So they're probably going to score, but I think we get the job done.
Yes, fingers crossed. We'll move on and do a couple of questions before we wrap this one up. Marco Villela, sorry if I got that wrong, asks, what are your objectives for the season from here? Mine are a derby win, finish in the top three, and reach the semis of the Europa League.
Oh, man. Well, I think one of those will happen. The top three thing. No, I think that's actually a fair assessment. I think you do have to make a cup run in Europa League because we can't do any other cup. Is Pioli going to be the guy who extends a derby losing streak to six? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I honestly think so.
I don't see us beating them. Now, knowing that Inter and Juve play each other next week or whenever it is, maybe in 2 weeks, I don't know, very soon.
Yeah.
That's one of them dropping points. They're both within two games of us, I think. So one of them drops points, and then we play them both back-to-back. You know, if we could pull out a win there, then huge. So yeah, that should be an objective. My objective is, I guess, Europa League and staying top four. I think we're comfortably in top four right now, obviously. So not too concerned about missing that one. But yeah, I don't think the title's within reach. I still have a glimmer of hope, you know, it was my season prediction that we would win it. But yeah, I guess never say never.
Yeah. Look, I hate to do this. There are two biggest rivals, but you've almost got to say fair play, like the pace that Juve and Inter going at. Just as a point of reference, actually, in terms of the amount of league points that we have after 21 games of the season, in 2020-21, we had 49 points at this stage of the season. Scudetto season, we had 48. Last season, we had 38. This season, we have 45. So our pace has actually improved. It's just that those two above us are not dropping much. Yes, they play each other. Ideally, we hope for a draw or maybe a Juve win to kind of nudge them ahead, because I'd rather they win it than Inter beat us to the second star. Mm. But if Inter win that game, then, and I think they're at home, it's at San Siro, I think it's curtains if they win that game, to be honest. They've just been on such a tear. And then when it comes to the derby, for all we just praise the character of the team, and ultimately we had to scrap out a last-minute win against Udinese, and I don't take much from beating Roma anymore. Who did we beat before that? Empoli. Yeah, Monster in December. We lost the two games against that. I just don't think this team has it yet to go and beat Inter, because they're so well-drilled and we are. But we'll get players back. You know, we'll have probably a very new-looking defensive department by then. Hopefully, we keep players fit as well. That'll be a big thing. Mm-hmm. And maybe we can definitely give them a better game. You never lie down, and anything can happen in a derby, of course. But at the moment, it seems like Inzaghi really has Pioli's number.
Yeah. However, we should point out that when we played them earlier this season, Tomori was suspended, so our best defender was out. Yeah. And it was a team of mostly new players who had only played three matches with the team. You know, they obviously had changes as well with Taram and Fratesi came on. And I think obviously Sommer was starting as well. So they had some new changes as well, but not as wholesale as we did. So maybe the team is clicking better. They know how they play. They know how they react. And they've obviously been watching Inter do their thing. So maybe it's a bit different this time around. I don't know. The good thing about this is most of these players, I shouldn't say most, but a good chunk of these players haven't lost five in a row to Inter. They've lost one. So
yeah, that's a good point.
It's on them to not get in their head about that.
Lost it 5-1, but still. We can't get any worse, right? Like, we can't get worse from the performance we saw earlier in the season. And I think tomorrow's absence was a big part of that, definitely. We simply have to be better in derbies. I think that's the one thing that people are holding above all else over Pioli at the moment. Europa League depends on the draw, I have to be honest. And then I don't see us trimming that gap because of how good the two teams above us have been, and I think we're just as likely to drop points when our run gets tougher as they are. So I don't hold much hope on that, but I hope to be proven wrong. Crypto Cam,
I do want to just go back to Inter. One other thing that they have in their favor is the fact that this
Marotta
season in all comps, This season in all comps, they have more penalties than us this season and last season combined. So, AC Rigore is not exactly the team that's getting the most penalties in Milan.
Just stuff like that. You know, the Verona game where Bastoni swings an elbow and nothing happens. Like, they've had the rubber of the green when it comes to refereeing decisions this season, without a doubt. Crypto Cam asks quite a few questions. One of them, he says, he loves Bennacer, but he's been out for 8 months. He came back for 2 games. I think it might have been more than that, but and then thinks it's okay to go and play AFCON and then possibly gets injured. It's not okay. The club pays his salary, not the country. Didn't put the club first, so I might cash in on him this summer. He might personally cash in on him, I suppose.
Well, that's not a question. That's just a statement.
I disagree with it.
Look, players get called up to the national teams. You can't discredit AFCON if you want to discredit the Euros or whatever the fuck we do in the U.S. You know, I don't watch it, but look, the AFCON is important to players of African descent. That's a big tournament for them. It's not their fault that it's in the middle of a season. It's just simply that's where it is. You know, it is but yeah, it's shitty timing. If it's anything, you know, it's Algeria calling them up, and that's sucky for us. I don't know if I would have taken that risk. Like, yeah, he's back, you assume he's full fitness, but he's only played, like you said, 2 games in 8 months at that point. So, you know, maybe if I'm Algeria, I'm looking at calling up someone else. But to say the club should have not allowed it is ridiculous. To say the player should have denied an opportunity to represent his country is ridiculous. You know, we all would do it. Yeah, we want him in the league, but let's also look at the other side of that same token. We just went 8 months without him, and we're not struggling as much as people like to think. We are clearly in third. What's a couple more games, you know? I don't think it's the end of the world. He comes back, he could win that spot. Adley's looking great, so it's okay. Like, it'll be fine.
Yeah, there was someone, I can't remember who it was. There was a journalist who published sort of a column saying a similar thing to what Crypto Cam has said there, about how he should have prioritized club. Like, we'd spent 8 months getting him back to fitness, and then he leaves at a decisive moment in our season. But unfortunately, as you rightly put, as fired up as you are about him leaving for AFCON, he is infinite amount of times more fired up about representing his country in a major tournament, and one that they have won. So he has a taste of success. You know, there's zero arguments about Chukwueze going and playing. It's just because Bennacer's had this injury that all of a sudden he owes us a month of his time rather than going and playing in what is, in his eyes, a prestigious tournament. The timing of it is what is problematic. You know, there's this and the Asia Cup going on at the same time. It's mid-European season. So I think people have more of a gripe with the scheduling conflict than anything else, whereas obviously Euros and World Cup happen between seasons. But that's not... that's not anything that the club or the player can do. He wants to answer the call from his country. He's there. He's up there with their best players. There's every reason that he would go and play for Algeria. And we just feel unfortunate because the circumstances have lined up in such a way that, you know, we miss him. Like, we'd be better with him in the team than not. But yeah, no gripe from me. Like, playing for your country is the highest honour that you can have in this sport. And potentially winning a trophy, because Algeria were among the favourites and they've won it before, potentially winning a trophy is something that you're not going to pass up, no matter how long you've been out. And Bennacer even said it himself in interviews. He would evaluate his condition and see how he is. But if he gets the call up, then he feels a responsibility to answer it. And I think that's fair enough. We'll do one more and then we shall wrap it up. Casey Cordre asks about Gabia. Looks like a new player. And I think he was called a new signing. He came in clutch these past 2 games. Do you see him continuing his good form, and can he improve even more?
Yes. I think every player can improve, and he's definitely on the right path. He's going to still get more game time. Like you said, I don't know when the next defender comes back that will usurp him. I don't know when Tomori returns. That's the only one off the top of my head who would pass his form. Maybe Chow, just because he obviously had the starting spot prior, but if Tomori comes back, it's Tomori Gabia. You know, if Chow comes back, it's Chow Gabia. So Gabia is definitely above Kier in the pecking order. He's above Pellegrini. He's there is a Pellegrino. See, I don't even Pellegrino, remember. He's above Kalulu. So wherever, whoever comes back, he's still going to play. It's when Chow and Tamori are both back that Gabbia's performances are really going to be taken into scrutiny and see, you know, did he earn that starting spot? And my personal opinion in this moment is yes, because Chow didn't look too hot prior to his injury. But we'll see. You know, I mean, if he gets benched, he's first off it. So
yeah,
it's not a bad place to be, knowing where he was at the beginning of the season, where we said, yeah, you're six in the pecking order, go find a new club, you know. And now he's starting, so good for him.
Yeah, I think the question with Gabbia is not like, has he had a good last two games? Because we can all see that he has. You know, can he improve? Yeah, because he's not even, he might be 25 now. I think he's 24, though. Like, you can get better from there with game time, which he hasn't had a lot of in recent years. It's more what happens when those defenders come back. We're in a position where I think they're going to be drip-fed back to us. So I think Kalulu's going to be first, and then Chiao, and then Tamori. So you're probably looking at a Gabbia Kalulu situation, then we'll see. But by that point, when they come back in February, Gabbia will have had a run of, I don't know, it could be six or seven starts. So we've got a bigger sample size to look at and realize where he's at level wise. He might have an awful game against Bologna against a quicker forward who's more technical. We don't know. But we'll know more when the players start coming back. And also, I think that people need to get their head around the idea that when our three first choices, no, what do I mean? Top three centre-backs do come back. They've been out for so long, they're going to be rusty. You know, they're going to make mistakes. So maybe Pioli will choose to play the hot hand and say, right, I'm going to put Gabbia next to you because he's been on it. And that will make it easier for the others to come back in. But at the moment, let's not put too many expectations on him. He's been fantastic since he came back, without a doubt. He's made some crucial interventions. And it does fill you with a bit of pride, I suppose, to see someone who's, he's not exactly had it easy. You know, he's been fifth choice defender for a while, but he's been kept around for various reasons. And, you know, now he's contributing. You can see how much it means to him. We'll wrap it up there. Thank you to everybody who listened. We've gone over an hour somehow. These things happen, but there was a lot to talk about, despite the fact it was only one game. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. Find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. AJ, cheers for joining.
Yeah, see you guys next week.
Back in a week's time.
Goal! Ancora Teo! È una meraviglia! Il gol di Teo Hernandez! Da un'area all'altra! È una meraviglia! Senti il mio cuore!